Hey, retrospective time. And guess what? I'm very excited because I'm finally getting around to doing another Dario Argento movie. I think we've done what? Suspiria, and we did a Deep Red. So I decided, because Shudder had it for a long time and I was like, finally get around to doing this one, I'm finally getting around to doing Inferno. This is the sort of, I don't want to call it a sequel to Suspiria because it's, I guess thematically, it's sort of a sequel. This is, as most horror fans probably know, the second in Dario Argento's so-called Three Mothers trilogy, which is kind of based on a Thomas De Quincey prose poem called Lavanna and Our Ladies of Sorrow from his Suspiria de Profundis, which kind of talked about three, he didn't really call them witches like in the text, but he was just talking about how there were these three women, like mythological women. And it's kind of like you had your three fates, you had your three furies, you had your three graces, you also had three sorrows, and these women were like responsible for all of the terrible things that happened in the world. So Dario Argento and Daria Nicolodi, who was his girlfriend, wife at the time, and also co-wrote Suspiria, and also co-wrote this one, although she didn't get any credit for it. So they came up with this story where they want to do like a fairy tale witch kind of thing, and it's kind of this loose thing. Now, like I said, it took forever for the third one to come out, which was Mother of Tears. That came out in 2007. There was probably a reason why it took so long for it to come out. I admit that I've only seen Mother of Tears once, probably about 2008, I think about a year after it came out. Like I got it on DVD, and I remember not really liking it. Because it didn't seem anything like the first two, which at least have some kind of thematic similarity. But you know, I'm willing to give it another shot because you know Ozzy Argento's in it and I love her and stuff like that. But so Inferno came out 3 years after Suspiria. It came out in 1980, and Dario Argento has said that he really did not have a fun time making this movie because for a large part of the production, he was suffering from a really bad case of hepatitis, and so he couldn't really. So some of the time, he had to like come to the set like in the bed or like in a chair, like they had to roll him out of the thing. And so he said pretty much his memories of making it are tainted by that. It's supposed to be set like half in Rome and half in New York. They shot most of it in Rome, but they did actually shoot a week in New York. You know, some shots in Central Park and everything like that. So it's not completely set in Rome. Also, for you trivia, like Italian horror movie trivia fans, this was the last movie that Mario Bava worked on. Although I think he just did like special effects and type of stuff. Like he did like some of the matte paintings and like some of the trick shots and stuff like that in the background. So while I will say that this movie, I love this movie, but it suffers in comparison with Suspiria, which a lot of movies do because Suspiria is amazing. This one kind of tries to do the same thing, you know, like in a thematic sort of way. It looks kind of the same with those beautiful, like saturated colors and those really gorgeous, like shots and angles and stuff like that. It's not quite as over the top, and the score, which is by Keith Emerson, is good. But it's not as awesome as the Goblin one from Suspiria was. Which, shit, the Goblin score from Suspiria, I just like, I can listen to that whole fucking album just on its own merits. It's like a fucking really good album. The Keith Emerson one is good, but it's a little more piano-based. It's not as over the top, not as operatic or bombastic, except for like the last song, which is like that kind of operatic Suspiriorum. Like, I like that one. That's like, that kicks ass. But even though I think it's a little incongruous where they put it in the movie, I wish they'd kind of saved it till the end. But, you know, what are you gonna do? So this one kind of has a similar thing where you got this woman and she lives in this old building in New York. She's a poet. And she buys this book from this creepy old, like, crippled bookseller named Kazanian. And it's a book about the three mothers, and she becomes like obsessed with this mythology, and she thinks maybe the three mothers are real, and that her building is one of the buildings that was built for these witches, which, because that's part of the mythology, that there was an alchemist named Varelli, and he built these three like houses of evil, like for these witches to live like as their bases of operation. And that kind of retcons it a little bit and says, you know, the one Mater Suspiriorum was at the one in Freiburg, Germany, which is what happened in Suspiria. The Mother of Tears is about Mater Lacrimarum. And that one is set in, I think that's set in Viterbo actually, or Rome or whatever. So this one is New York based, even though most of it takes place in Italy, honestly. So she gets obsessed with it and starts like looking around for to find out if this building is actually the seat of like where this woman lives. And she writes to her brother Mark, who is a music student in Rome, and you know, tells him about she's like, I think this is the building, and it's like, I think I'm in trouble and all this other kind of shit. But he doesn't get to read the whole letter. Like his girlfriend, like he leaves it somewhere and his girlfriend like picks it up, and like people start getting murdered by, you know, your standard giallo black gloved killer. And so he's not entirely sure like what's going on with his sister. So he like rushes to New York because he's worried about her. Like he tries to call her and the fucking line's all fucked up and he can't get a straight answer out of her. So he gets there and she's disappeared. And then all of this other weird shit starts to happen. Now, I will say that much like Suspiria, the plot, it has a plot, but just like a lot of Dario Argento's movies,
It's like he forgets what the plot
it's not, well, it's not important.
is.
He's more concerned about the look of it. He's more concerned about making this. His movies are like very nightmarish, very fairy tale-esque. So, I mean, if he's gonna go for, you know, like in Suspiria, like this woman is like exploring this, you know, dance academy. She opens a door and falls in a room and it's full of barbed wire. Just because. I mean, you wouldn't really have that in real life, probably. But it looked cool in the movie. It was just like a cool, weird thing that might happen in a dream. So he's like, well, I'm putting it in the fucking movie. So the same thing happens in Inferno. One of the best, you know, examples of this is like very near the beginning of the movie where, you know, the woman that starts the whole thing off, and she has this clue about where like some of the keys are, where, you know, how you find out that this, if this house is one of the houses of evil or whatever. And she goes down into the cellar to like check it out and see if she can find like the name and the image of the witch and everything. And she goes down there and she drops her keys into what she thinks is a puddle in the cellar. And then she sticks her hand down in the puddle and it's just like really, really deep. And then she can't get the keys, and then they slip off this thing that they're caught on. And she goes down to this thing, and it's a whole fucking ballroom, like underneath this fucking building that's just all full of water.
That was weird because there's carpeting in there, there's chandeliers in there, there's like, you know, tables and chairs. I was tripping. I was
And then there's like a rotting corpse down there.
one of the things you watch these movies and it kind of makes sense that during the 60s and 70s the Japanese were more influenced by what was going on in Italy when it came to, you know, when it came to do with filmography. They're more influenced by that than they were America. I think a lot of American studios didn't really want to work with the Japanese studios, but the Italians and the Japanese worked together. But a lot of Japanese cinema, I think, was influenced by Dario Argento with the lighting and filmography. Seems like it.
Yeah, it really does. Well, the odd thing about, okay, so 20th Century Fox had actually distributed Suspiria in the United States, even though they distributed it under like a subsidiary. I don't know if they were like ashamed of it or something, like International
Well,
Classics or something.
in that era, foreign films were just a no-no, especially Italian films.
But it
They
should be
just
said that they
didn't.
put it out and it was a huge success. They were like surprised, because it was just, I mean, Suspiria, like I said, it's a fucking classic. It was just this weird, like ultra violent, like especially compared to other, you know, American films at the time.
I remember when I was a kid, my dad going through television, and as soon as he realized that something was Italian, he's like, oh no, he'd turn it.
Well, I
Mostly with
think,
like a spaghetti western type stuff. Now, some of the shit he liked,
yeah.
but I guess, I think it was just because quality from Italy was spotty. It was either really bad or it was really good. But
Yeah.
dubbing was, I think, was a problem. The American audience did not like anything that looked like it was dubbed.
And most Italian movies, they did dub them because usually, you know, not always, but I think in the vast majority of cases, most of the actors, it was like an international cast. They had Americans, Brits, Germans, they had all this other stuff. So they basically just said, well, everyone just speak your native language and then we'll just dub it all into English or we'll dub it all into Italian later on for the theater market. And that's generally what they did. So even now, like Dario Argento's movies and everything like that, a lot of times you're not hearing the person's real voice, even if they are speaking English, because they just dubbed everything over with the same language.
And there's no original dub. Every country got their own dub.
They did.
So, you know, because no one in those movies spoke the same language.
Yeah, not usually.
So there wasn't really a real dub or an official dub. They just tried to maximize what they had.
That was just how they did it. Right. And like I said, since they were usually working with an international cast, and they figured, well, it's better to just have like Americans or Brits dub everybody into English rather than having people, because even like the Italians and Germans and stuff that could speak English, they said, oh, well, maybe their accent is too thick. I mean, because even in Suspiria, like Udo Kier was in that and he's a German. He could speak English, but he does have kind of, I don't think his accent's all that thick, but, you know, they dubbed him over with, like, an American actor in Suspiria, which I always thought was very funny.
I just remember I was old enough to remember the 70s attitude. If a fucking foreign accent came out of somebody, the older people at that time, they just didn't want, I mean, they dubbed Mad Max and Road Warrior.
I know.
That shows you how intelligent the fucking...
Like,
how intelligent the studio
brilliant.
Movies, yeah. It tells you how intelligent the American movie studios were at that day. They were fucking dumb. They didn't just go, this is an awesome movie, listen to it in its original language, or listen to it with an Australian accent. It's happening in Australia. This is what they sound like.
Yeah.
Just add something to the movie. They just didn't think that way. They were always trying to pass everything off as an American movie.
I'm just so glad they don't really do that anymore. It's like most foreign movies that you can, like, if you, like, ones they have on Netflix or whatever, you can watch a dubbed version. But I kind of feel like most people nowadays would just rather watch it in the original language and read. Because I don't want to... It's too distracting that's not the people's real voices.
When me and my buddies were fucking watching Mad Max 1, and I think even Mad Max 2, but I remember Mad Max 1, we're like, why is this shit fucking dubbed? You know what I mean? And it sounded cheap. Real cheap. Later on, we got our hands on the fucking original Australian dub, and all of a sudden, that movie was just fucking awesome. It was a masterpiece.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Because I've watched a few movies, like, and I didn't realize they were dubbed. Like, for example, on Netflix, I watched Under the Shadow, which is an Iranian movie, a horror movie. And I didn't realize that there was a subtitled version, so I watched the dubbed version, and I was like, oh man, I was like, this seems like such an awesome movie, but the dubbing is like just really, really bothering me. But then like later on, I discovered, oh, there was, you know, a subtitled version, so I watched that, and I was like, oh, okay, that's much better.
Got a lot better,
Because it's like, it really makes a huge difference. It's like we were watching one thing, I think in, what was it, a Japanese movie?
We were watching that Chinese movie, that Chinese science fiction movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Where they were trying to save the earth,
you know what I mean?
It was all freezing and everything.
Yeah, because the dubbed version came on, and I was like, God, this is driving
terrible.
Me crazy.
Turned over to Chinese and it all
made
sense.
Much better.
Yeah,
much
all
much
made
better.
Sense. Yeah.
I can't stand dubbing. But like I said, in the Dario Argento movies, it never really bothered me just because I know that that's kind of how they planned to do it. So it's not like it was just like an afterthought. So I just kind of like roll with it. But what I was going to say was that, you know, a long time ago, was that Suspiria was such a big surprise hit that 20th Century Fox... You know, so Dario Argento and Daria Nicolodi came out and said, oh, okay, well, since that was such a big success, we'll do a follow-up. We'll do Inferno. You know, they wrote, Daria Nicolodi, like, wrote the story, and then Dario took her notes and wrote a screenplay out of it, and like I said, didn't give her any credit. Although, I think she said later on that she didn't ask for any. So, I don't think it was him being an asshole or anything, because he always seemed like an okay dude.
These movies, though, but, you know, even the British kind of copied them in a way. That Psychomania, wasn't that called Psychomania?
Yeah.
That movie had a lot of Dario Argento type shit.
Although that came out
before.
Well, Dario had done, he had done a couple of giallo movies before, because, when did Psychomania came out? What, 73?
Because it had some of that giallo lighting, man.
He had done a couple of giallo movies. I think he did Four Flies on Grey Velvet and maybe Bird with the Crystal Plumage was 71, I want to say, or 72. So he had done like a couple. But Suspiria didn't come out until 1977.
And that's when they really turned it up.
Well, the thing about it is that if you want to see where Dario got it, You can go back to Mario Bava, Blood and Black Lace, which is not quite as extreme, but you can see like where that came from. Like, he's not copying him exactly, but he kind of took that nascent thing. And
so,
like,
you think Bava's work might have inspired Psychomania? Because when I was watching Psychomania,
it might have, yeah.
It had that Italian vibe, especially when the guy goes to his mom's house.
Yeah.
And just the way it was, you know, decorated and the way it was lit in the inside, it just seemed like a giallo movie to me.
Yeah. Well, giallo had been, I think the first giallo movie, which was Mario Bava, was The Girl Who Knew Too Much, even though that was black and white. But there were a lot of giallo movies that came out in the 60s. Okay. So it's not always that lighting, but it's always that real Baroque, you know, interiors and like that, like all those crazy, like operatic angles and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
It's just really stylized, some more so than others. But, I mean, Dario is primarily known as like a visual stylist. Like, he was very into the fairy tale dreamlike sort of vibe. He made giallo films too, like early in his career, but he just has like a really interesting like eye, like the way he comes up with this kind of shit. So he took all those tropes and just like,
now what about Roman Polanski's hooking The Tenant? Would you call that kind of like a giallo movie?
No, that's not a giallo.
Okay.
Not at all.
Because, well, when I was a kid, I could watch them back to back on, you know what I mean, on cable.
Yeah.
Giallo and that, and I really didn't differentiate them too much.
In fact, I would not. See, this, there's a bone of contention, and I think I talked about this a little bit on my Suspiria review. I would not call Suspiria or Inferno giallo movies either, even though they have that look to them, and they have a couple of things. A giallo movie is generally a crime movie. It's a gloved and masked killer who goes around picking off. It's like a slasher movie.
So like Alice Sweet Alice.
Sort of. Yeah, that kind of has that vibe too. And it has like a bunch of red herring characters. It's more like a mystery.
All right.
But with gory operatic elements.
I got you.
Suspiria and Inferno have elements of that. Like, you know, Inferno has like a black gloved killer who's going around. You don't find out who it is.
But they're not technically giallo because it's not a murder mystery.
But it's not really a murder mystery.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's two different. You could argue, like, if you want to say Suspiria is a giallo, that's fine. It's like, I'm not going to fight you or anything. But it's like, personally, I think Suspiria is more of a supernatural thriller. It says witches and shit like that. Giallo don't usually have supernatural elements. I have seen a couple that do, but it's very, very rare.
It has badass lighting though, man. I like how it was shot.
Everything in Suspiria and Inferno in particular, my old house that I used to live in Daytona, I decided I was going to decorate the whole thing. Like, I was the paint scheme and like all that kind of stuff. I was going to do it like Suspiria and Inferno. I even did like in Inferno, if you guys remember, there are these great, like these black doors with these red like insets that are like kind of Art Nouveau looking. And I painted like all my doors to look like that. Like, I couldn't afford to do the whole inset thing like in the red, like in the movie, but I just like painted them to make it look like that. Like, you know, trompe l'oeil type of thing. And they looked really fantastic. But yeah, so these are beautiful, beautiful looking movies. You just have to approach them in a way that they're not logical necessarily. And in fact, Dario Argento himself has said that a lot of his movies are very Jungian. He uses like a lot of Jungian kind of consciousness type of stuff, where particularly in Inferno, which is kind of more like, even though it's called Inferno and the thing ends with like a big fire and everything, but most of the symbolism in it is water symbolism. Like, you know, she goes down to the ballroom at the beginning, there's like always like dripping water. There's always just, you know, and at one point the character Mark, who's played by Lee McCloskey, who was in a shit ton of fucking soap operas and all that other kind of stuff back in the day. He was actually quite famous. You know, he has like passes out in dreams about like ocean waves and all this kind of stuff. So there's all this like water, like womb, like kind of, you know, because of the three mothers, the whole mother womb type life giving type stuff. I kind of feel like he's getting into that. And also the whole thing about going underneath the buildings and there being like water underneath the buildings and secret tunnels and mazes like underneath the buildings. So it's like, it's not logical at all.
No, I have dreams like that though.
But yeah, but it's just this really dreamlike kind of imagery. So you really kind of have to take his movies. And I know that a lot of people don't.
They're not for everybody.
They're not for everybody. No. Like, there's like a particular type of people that like them. I just love like the whole, these movies and like all giallo movies, like I just really love the whole aesthetic of it. The whole, yeah. I could watch them like all day long.
To me, they look good. They're shot well. There's some good imagery in them. There's some good scenes in them. But for me, they're a little slow. They're slow and plotting. But that's just me. I mean,
yeah.
That's the only thing I don't like about them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If they'll kind of take 15 minutes to do something that I think should take more like 5 minutes to do. But it's like I said, they're trying to give you an experience that the audience back then would enjoy.
It's more an immersive kind of experience. Right. And like I said, you know, what I was going to say before was that because Suspiria was such a big hit, 20th Century Fox, you know, gave Dario Argento the money to do Inferno because he said, okay, well, we can do a follow-up to it since that was like such a big surprise hit. So he gave him $3 million. They got a couple, like some more money, like from some other investors. They made the movie. The movie came out in Italy and was like a really big success. I mean, there was like lines around the block. It's like they had to turn people away and shit like that. Because it was fucking Dario Argento, right? And then 20th Century Fox, for whatever reason, didn't even release it in the United States after all of that. Like, they gave him money to do it. Suspiria was a giant hit. And it's like, he says he thinks what happened was that before the movie came out, like it came out in Italy and it was a success there. But at 20th Century Fox, I guess the management changed out. And he's like, it wasn't just my movie. It was just like pretty much all the movies that had been greenlit, like under the previous management. They just said, fuck those movies because they didn't want to deal with them, I guess, because someone else had done them. Weird. So he's like, so they didn't even release it. It sat on the shelf for 5 years. Then they put it out in the U.S. for like a week or something, like in New York City. And then they just later released it to like VHS. It's like they didn't even put it out in the fucking theater, which is stupid.
It wasn't their work. And they probably didn't want it to compete against something else that they had going. They didn't want it, you know.
Yeah, he said they jumped like a bunch of movies that had been like under that, you know, that came out around the same time or were made around the same time.
They probably just had other ideas to make money. You know, that's all it was.
Yeah, it's I don't think it was anything personal against him or against the movie or anything. You know what I mean? So I think maybe that experience kind of soured him on, you know, working within the big Hollywood system, because like I said, it took him, you know, however long, until 2007 to make Mother of Tears. And I just, like I said, I remember that one not being very good just because it didn't seem thematically similar. His movies kind of went downhill for me after, I think the last one of his that I liked was Stendhal Syndrome, which actually I just rewatched probably a month or two ago, and I still really liked it. Like, it still really held up. But I think all the ones I saw after that, like The Card Player, like that horrible Dracula one, were just bad. And it's just, I don't remember Mother of Tears being bad. I just remember being really disappointed in it because it didn't look like, because, it, you know, I wish that he had made the trilogy at the time. You know what I mean? Because you got Suspiria, this like amazing, and, you know, another thing, too, is that Suspiria was such an amazing fucking classic movie, just this gorgeous looking, you know, opera of violence and everything. And anything that came after that was not going to be as good. And I don't think Inferno is as good, but at least it had some kind of thematic continuation with Suspiria. It sort of looked the same. It sort of had a similar theme to it. You know what I mean? So I wish that, you know, a couple years after Inferno had come out, he had made, you know, the third movie. The weird thing, and this always like weirded me out. So, you know, Suspiria comes out, Inferno comes out, which, you know, was about, you know, about Tenebrarum. And then he made the movie Tenebrae, which you would think would also be one of the Three Mothers movies, but it wasn't. It was just a giallo. So I was like, why? I wonder why he called it that. And then he called that one Inferno. I don't know. I was like, it really bothered me. It's like, he could have just like switched the titles. It's just, I don't know. That just bugged me. But I just wish that it would have been, so it would have been like this, you know, three thing that went together. So, you know, the sad thing was Inferno didn't really do as well as it could have just because it kind of got shit on by 20th Century Fox, which put all, you know, the management put all this money into it, and then they just, you know, changed management out, and they didn't want to release, they didn't fucking release the thing.
Well, it kind of makes sense from the American point of view, because if you look at what mainstream Hollywood does, is it just makes very generic shit, especially during that era. It's just generic stuff. Most of those movies are forgotten. Think about what they made during the decades of the 60s and 70s. A lot of it's kind of forgotten.
Although a lot of fucking great movies came out.
Yeah, but you know, it's kind of a rarity. We know that for every one that is a hit that you remember, there's like 50 of them that are long forgotten.
Although I think that's true of any era, really. And
I don't know. I saw an analysis and said that the heyday actually was the 80s and certain parts of the 90s. And it was because the system worked different back then. Directors were able to tell the story and to direct. Producers kind of were standing in the background. They were not trying to have creative input or make the movie happen. Then what's happened recently is that producers want to have all this creative input, and they're making people take scenes in and out of the movies that the directors put in there, and fucks the movie all up. And then the movie fails, and then the producer's like, "Why did I lose my money? You lost your fucking money because you didn't listen to the damn director." A lot of the great movies from the 80s and the 90s were because the director was able to do his job.
Well, I think that was true of the 60s and 70s. And I mean, 60s and 70s were probably the age of the auteur, where directors were kind of, a lot of times, were given a free hand, really. I mean, they got away with some crazy shit in the fucking 70s that probably would not fly anymore. But,
Well, even in the 80s, they did shit that wouldn't fly anymore.
Yeah, and it's not so much, but like I said, I think it's always been a hassle. I mean, directors have always complained about working within the system, because anytime there's a system where there's all this money and there's millions of dollars to be lost, you're going to have other people intruding on your vision, because a movie is, you know, a large, it's a group effort. It's not just one person making stuff. But I do like that the way nowadays it's kind of going more toward crowdfunding and and making your own shit and having places where people can see it. So
the Hollywood way of doing things is an old fashioned way and not good. It's a very bloated way of making movies. You just have a producer that fucking has a shit ton of money come forth and fucking say, "I want to make this movie right here. This is the director." And then fucking, you know what I mean? Appoints the director. And then he stops the director from doing what he's doing and puts his own fucking vision in there. And the director's like, "I don't know if that's going to work." And the next thing you know, you have these fucking abomination movies that fail. You know what I mean?
Well, it's,
stay the fuck out of the movie.
Well, like I said, it's always kind of the same. And, you know, me being, you know, an artistic person, being a graphic designer and stuff, I've run into many, many situations where, you know, where people that are, you know, kind of in charge or whatever, but aren't creative people, are like telling you need to do this, that, and the other thing. And it either can't be done or it's going to look stupid. And you can't really tell them that, because they just want what they want and you just have to do it. And kind of, that's just what you gotta have to do. Because even though you think it looks like crap and you don't think it's going to work, but they're the ones with the money. So it's like, what are you going to do? It kind of ends up like that.
And if you ask me, a lot of money people just fuck up everything they touch anyway. They're not artistic.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, that's kind of been a problem since time immemorial.
If you got money, chances are you're not artistic. Let an artist do some shit.
Yeah.
All right. You're good at making money. You're not good at fucking
creating art. That's two completely different things.
Completely different fucking things. All
right. Sometimes it meshes.
Very rare.
But it's not usually, sadly.
And a person who makes a lot of money usually is very unlikely to be able to tell you what's cool and what isn't. Those motherfuckers don't know what's cool.
Well, because usually, you know, making more money means you appeal to more people. And the more people you appeal to, usually, like, the more bland something is.
Yeah. Right.
Not always, but generally.
And then they're riding on waves. They're not creating a wave. That's another thing.
Yeah.
Guys who make a lot of money also tend to be fucking followers. All right.
Because they're like, well, that's a proven way to make money.
We're going to go that way. So they don't make anything new.
Yeah.
They just fucking ride on a wave that's already there. And when the wave is long gone, they don't understand why they can't ride that wave anymore. That wave has gone out. The tide's changed and everything. Fucking the shit that you think is cool, now the young people who go and spend money on shit, that shit's lame.
Yeah.
From their point
of
view.
Yeah, things are only cool for a very brief window.
Right.
But yeah, so even though, like I said, Inferno, it's one of my favorite Dario Argento movies, but I mean, it's not a patch on Suspiria, obviously, but most of his movies are not. But it really does have, you know, there's a couple things that could have been better in it. Like I didn't like the costuming at the end, like where she comes out of the mirror and like, and she's deaf and everything, because the costuming looked kind of cheap. You know, the skeleton Grim Reaper kind of thing. I wish they had done like a little bit of better job on the makeup on that. And like I said, I didn't like the Keith Emerson score as much as the Goblin score, although some of it was like really good. I liked the piano bits and like that operatic thing at the end. But other than that, I mean, if you really like Suspiria, I think you should really see this, because it's kind of like its sister film, and it kind of has a lot of, you know, similarities. It even had like homages, like a couple of the shots, like with, you know, with the woman, like Sarah, like in the back of the cab, like with the lighting and the rain and everything like that, just like the beginning of Suspiria and stuff. Like I said, this was Mario Bava's last film. He did some of the special effects for it. His son Lamberto Bava also worked on this as well. And another guy that worked on this was William Lustig, who later went on to make Maniac. He was
a good movie.
He was kind of like the go-to, because he's a New York guy. Yeah. And he was a big fan of Dario Argento. So when he heard that Dario Argento was coming to film for a week in Central Park, you know, he kind of got in with it and like kind of got them all. And in fact, he asked Daria Nicolodi, who is in this movie, and like I said, was Dario Argento's wife at the time. He asked her to be in Maniac, like he sent her the script and everything, but she hated it. So she wouldn't be in it. But William Lustig, like getting together with Dario Argento and like letting Dario read the script and the kind of the connections they made, like actually let him make Maniac later on. So he was like super jazzed, like to meet Dario Argento and got to be on the set and everything, like the week that they were filming in New York. Also, I have to say one of my favorite scenes in this shit is when fucking Kazanian goes to Central Park and there's all these cats like hanging around his shop. And I guess the cats are like representative of like the witch, because it seems like they're always kind of around and they're always like attacking people and shit. So, and he's like always bitching about these cats, and then he starts beating up on the cats, which is very upsetting. And he puts them all in a bag and he's going to go to fucking Central Park and he like tries to drown them. And then his crippled ass like falls in the water and he can't get out. And he's like crying for help. And I'm just kind of like, fuck you, dude. You just killed all this cat. Then all these fucking rats come swimming and like start eating him and shit. And then like this guy comes running over from a hot dog cart and you think he's going to save him. And then he just goes chonk. And he just like chops his fucking head. He's like, here you go, rats, eat him up. And I was like, yeah, that's what you get. Don't fuck with cats. But yeah, so this one is not, like I said, it's not quite as over the top, not quite as operatic, not quite as violent. It does have a couple scenes, like the whole like window guillotine type thing. And, you know, there's a couple stabbings and stuff. It's not, you know, it doesn't have anything of like the level of barbed wire rooms or like the knife in the open beating heart type of thing like they had in Suspiria. But it's definitely, definitely worth watching. I think it's one of his better movies, and it's gorgeous to look at. Pretty cool score. Pretty cool, like atmosphere, like kind of a creepy kind of shit going on. And like I said, some of the scenes, like the underwater ballroom and all that stuff, are like amazing, like really dreamlike and shit like that. So it's on Shudder at the moment, and it's probably streaming other places too. I think Suspiria might be on Tubi for free, but I don't know if Inferno is. But Inferno is definitely on Shudder, so definitely check it out.